Hello, my fans, friends. Welcome to the Rich Herring podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. Thanks to everyone who's come to see the Can I Have My Ball Back tour so far. It's been going really well. I've got a 4-star review in The Standard, 4-star review in The Telegraph, who once called me the worst comedy experience of the year, so that's a turnaround. People have been coming, people have really been enjoying it, and it's getting better and better. The only gigs this week are both in Pocklington, the town I was born in, near York. There's a couple of tickets left for the evening show and a few more tickets left for the matinee, I think about 4:30. But love to see you there, Yorkshire. Pop along. Check richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs to see if I'm coming near to you. There are tickets left for nearly every show in the tour. I think Norwich has sold out. And a couple of gigs in London could do with your support as well. Anyway, please listen to the podcast. Do spread the news about the podcast to your friends. Listen as much as you can. Numbers are slightly down, which may affect the future of this podcast. So just leave it playing, even if you're not in the room. Love you. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy whatever it is you're going to listen to.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out of pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello, my finest of friends. Welcome to the Richard Herring, Rahulastapa, etc. feed. Thank you for listening to my podcast. We're powered by Acast Plus. If you join them, you can get all sorts of wonderful extras. For as little as, I think, sort of £2 a month, but if you get £5 a month, you get everything. And there's lots of bonus stuff there that I think you will enjoy. Do come and see Rahulastapa on tour, richardherring.com/Rahulastapa. But for now, let's have a retro Rahulastapa. We are going all the way back to sometime in the past, I think, for the first appearance of my friend and fantastic stand-up and brilliant flatmate in Edinburgh for many years, Sarah Kendall. I know you're going to enjoy this. She's gone on to terrific success since this. She's a very, very talented writer and performer and actor. Wow. So please sit back, relax, and enjoy this retro Rahulastapa. Spread it around to your friends like herpes if you enjoy it. Thank you very much. Goodbye. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Leicester Square Theatre. Please welcome a man who might be wearing a pyjama top. I can't quite work it out. He's Richard Herring. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to... You're much better than last week's audience already, because there was hardly any of them. So welcome... He didn't want to see me interview myself for some reason. So, welcome to Rich Jane's Leicester Square Theatre podcast. I was actually, I was at Take That concert, and the young kids there, they were talking about all the teenagers at the Jack Take That concert. They called it Rahulastapa. So, it's I was catching on. I was very nearly a film star this week, because I was showing off before. And when I say very nearly, I did an audition for a film that I clearly didn't get. They haven't got in touch. They told me I haven't got it, but it filmed yesterday. So I'm guessing. I'm taking that as a kind of hint. I tweeted yesterday. Twitter has gone really fucking... It's almost not worth going on Twitter. Every time I tweet something, I think, shall I tweet it? Is it worth the storm of idiots who are going to come in and not understand that that was clearly a joke? When the day yesterday, with the Guardian, had printed an open letter written by a mother to her 10-year-old son. I don't know if you saw it was on Twitter. A lot of people were tweeting about it. It wasn't specifically naming her son, but it was complaining that he wasn't very grateful for all she'd done
for him, which was a bit churlish. I know, actually, if you've got kids, they behave like twits. And I nearly said something really rude and then changed it to twits. What's happened to me? They behave like cunts. Is what I thought. I don't know why that didn't come out. And you've just got to put up with it. And when they're about 45, they'll go, oh, yeah, that my mum was actually trying to be nice to me. Now I get it. So I tweeted, open letter to my 8-month-old daughter, stop shitting yourself. It's undignified and disrespectful. I don't mind, but come on. I sort of assumed, I thought, well, some people won't get the reference to that and they might be a bit confused, but they'll know I'm a comedian and also that that's clearly a joke because my daughter's 8 months old. Not really much point in writing an open letter to her. She isn't even on Twitter, even if she could read. It's gone down a bit, but there was, let me see if I can find it, there was some really stupid responses on here. Damn, it's moved. Someone said, the first person actually came on and said, to quote John McEnroe, you cannot be serious. Which kind of sort of just shows how stupid they are that they think that's worth saying. But also, I tweet back saying, no, I'm not. I'm not serious. It's a joke. My daughter can't read. And she's like, she's probably going to shit herself. Someone else said, do you think, I know this is a joke, but do you think it could lead to serious issues in future life? No, I don't think it could. I mean, if I was... People getting really angry going, come on, she's 8 months old, give her a bit more time, and then maybe she will... how stupid are people? Do you get to the stage where you just think, oh, maybe I'll just check the context of this and just maybe I'll have a just step back and think for a second. They're just waiting. So I'm kind of furious about that. Look, we're going to crack on because we've got lots to get in today and two fantastic guests. I mean, sorry, just one guest, and then next week we'll have another fantastic guest for next week, obviously. And our first guest today is probably best known for her appearance on the sketch show Beehive. Beehive. That's why we're all here to find out all about Beehive. It's Sarah Kendall, ladies and gentlemen. Here she is, Sarah Kendall from Beehive. That's all right. Sit down. I won't kiss her. I'm a bit ill.
Oh, look how excited they are. Look at their excited little faces.
They were so amazed to know it was going to be you.
I pity the next act. They're so fucking excited to see me.
They couldn't even...
Everyone's already looking at their watches like, how long... Eddie's here when? Sorry, but
What do you remember about Beehive? We'll get it out of the way.
I remember it just... nobody watched it.
Oh. I watched one of them.
One of them? That's about, yeah.
You were my friend.
It was a bit of a catastrophe, I guess. I don't know. I mean, it was a while ago.
What was it? It was on, like, BBC Three or something. It was like
E4.
E4, same thing.
It's worse.
You're not going to get on again with that attitude.
I know. Oh, God, don't skate. Does anyone know what he's talking about? The sketch show?
That man went, yeah.
And he's sliding down in his chair. You see, the body language was like, it was like he didn't want to,
But
did
you
like
all,
it?
Did you like Beehive?
That is exactly that. That was like...
You couldn't just say yeah. You couldn't just go, yes, I liked it. Just not lie. Even, you couldn't just lie.
Not even in front of 400 people to cut me some slack.
No. It was all right. There was good people in it. And you were in it as well.
Oh, fuck off, Richard. It's a terrible start.
It is. I always do that.
Do you?
Yeah, I always do that.
Yeah, right. Okay. Are you going to do that to Eddie?
I am going to do it to Eddie. Do you want to know what he's going to be?
Yeah, go on.
Reepy Cheek from the Chronicles of Narnia. So watch out for that. That's what he was best known for. Still better than Beehive.
It's better than...
I think it's a bit controversial because he didn't do the next Chronicles of Narnia, so it could
what
be
What do
a
you think happened?
I think Simon Pegg took over the role.
Do you?
Yeah, so I'm going to try and find out. But
He might
walk off because of Reepy Cheek. There might be some awful story.
Have you ever had someone walk off?
No. Steve Merchant nearly, but it's he walked off at the end. Grumbly, though. Walked off quite fast at the end.
Really? What did you say?
Oh, you know.
Just assume.
I'd say that a conglomeration of things that I thought he was understanding were a joke. You know, so I'm only joking.
But it's kind of weird because I feel like I know you well, but yes. I will say stuff and open up more than I possibly should.
Okay.
But I do forget that there's like a whole ton of people. I frequently do this. I forget. Yeah. Oh, this is being recorded and stuff.
Well, so do I. That's the that was the problem with Stephen Merchant, probably. So, but that's fine. We can always cut stuff out. Afterwards. That's why it's good for the people here. Because
yeah.
there's always a. So, well. so, no, you are so funny, I have to say. I've been watching
you. Thank you
really
Richard.
Are. You're a fantastic stand up.
That's so nice.
Some people
Richard.
May not be aware of you, such as the woman who works upstairs at the box office who wouldn't let you in.
Yeah,
today.
That's the interesting. That's the interesting thing with my career. The longer I do it, the more obscure I become. Like, when I first started, I never had any trouble getting into venues. And now I have to, like, go, no, I promise I'm on the show. I know Richard. And they go, we just have to call downstairs just to make sure. But this happens, like, at every venue that I go to perform at. They go, and what tickets were your name under? I'm like, no, I'm on the bill. I'm Sarah.
It still happens to me as well, I have to say, a lot. Yeah, when I go and do gigs, loads of times you get, cause, like, there'll be a doorman or something. You go... And I would usually just walk through and they'll go, sorry, where's your ticket? And I'll say, I don't need one.
Yeah.
And they'll go, well, you do need one, sir.
You do need one. To see
I'm sorry, you
Richard Perry. You can't just walk in off the street.
And so then you've committed to that.
Yeah.
You can't really go because I am the...
But you know what's hurtful? I already know the venue staff here because I did a season of previews here like a year ago. So it's not even like my first time here. Or I go, oh, you're probably not... I have to go, no, remember, we met. I chatted to you like for like half an hour.
It's because you're so glamorous on stage and you know, when you're, when you're on incognito, because you have to...
Bit ugly off stage. Yeah. I go, who's this ugly
you're
bitch?
You're hiding yourself.
She can't work in theatre.
you were not. You've been doing stand-up for a long time.
A fucking long time, Richard. Too ages. Long. Way too long.
And you got nominated this year for the Edinburgh Award in Edinburgh.
The Edinburgh Award in Edinburgh. Yeah. Which you get for doing the Edinburgh. Someone wooed. That's
and you've been nominated for that before as well.
11 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. That was a big, like, you know, when the nominations came out, they're going, and when was the... This is 11 years between nominations. That's a long time, isn't it? Is that the longest? And I was like, yeah. Even that kind of made it a bitter pill. I don't enjoy anything. That's my problem. I just and you make it worse because you hate everything as well.
I do. Well, I kind of hate the awards. The awards are kind of a bit silly in a way. Like Tom Parry this year was
newcomer.
Best newcomer. Yeah. He's been coming to Edinburgh since about 1997. So if you've been working in a group, you're allowed to be a best newcomer. But that's sort of slightly stupid.
But also, there is that thing where there is no, like, the idea that there is this empirically correct shortlist where it is, those are the absolute, the best shows at the festival. There's just no such thing. So it just comes down to what the panel go with that particular year.
But it's good if you get nominated.
It's fucking nice. Times. I mean, it is. I mean, I say that, but it's nice. But, you know.
That's two more times than I've been nominated.
Yeah, but look how many people are turning up. You don't have to fight with the venue staff to get in.
not anymore. It took me a while. And most of these people weren't here last week when I interviewed myself. In fact, most of these people have come to see someone who isn't even on today.
Yeah, right. So. This is so good for our ego. Who are they? How come you're selling so well? I don't mean to be rude. There's so many people in this room, and it's a Sunday afternoon.
Yeah.
That's extraordinary. You're doing so
well. I think
so
it's, mainly down, it's mainly down to me. I think it's mainly popularity, my own popularity.
It is.
Well, if I didn't do it, sometimes people go on, as we were talking about YouTube, and people comment and go, I like these interviews, but I don't like Richard Herring. He is not funny. You're going to go, yeah, that's fine, fair enough. But, you know, if I wasn't here doing them, they wouldn't be here. So, you know, at least I'd foreseeably say, oh, thank you for facilitating.
Yeah. I hate you, but thank you for bringing this person along to your awful show. But that's, I mean, you were talking about the tweets and stuff. I mean, you take it really well, by the sounds of things. If you get a nasty tweet, you
know. I just think it's, I think that's, it's funny when, you've got to be careful on Twitter, I think, as when you're tweeting about something else.
Yeah.
Because if you get the wrong end of the stick like that, you look stupid. So, so it's now, when it started, I would just tweet everything that came into my head. I think, oh, that's funny, I'd tweet it and it wouldn't matter because no one cared.
Yeah.
But now I think very carefully about everything and discard most of my tweets because I think it's not worth the hassle.
Yeah.
But it'd be good if that everyone else did that as well. Yeah. Rather than thinking, how can that man say a baby isn't allowed to shit himself? I'm so angry with that. He cannot be serious.
Yeah. No, I love that, as John McEnroe would say. What a great... As John McEnroe said, you cannot... I mean, there's just... any time I tweet something, I lose followers. Like, if I do, like, News Quiz or The Now Show, you know, I'll pick up maybe 10 or 15 followers. And then if I just tweet something that I think is, like, amusing, I just hemorrhage followers. It's like people accidentally follow me and go, oh, this is a fucking idiot I follow, as soon as I voice an opinion. I tweeted something about the Nutty Professor, which I watched last night, and I enjoyed it.
The original or the Eddie Murphy?
No, the Eddie Murphy reboot with the farting, and, you know, and I tweeted that I'd enjoyed it and just lost, like, 11 followers.
Because I can't follow someone who enjoyed...
The Nutty Professor. But I think, why did they follow... Who did they think I was in the first place? That when I... Like, you would know that I would like The Nutty Professor because I like farts.
Yeah.
Like, I do find farts amusing.
Why not?
Right.
Who doesn't?
Okay. But yeah, the fact that someone would go, oh, unfollow. I can't.
Well, that's not the part. It's my favourite thing is when they tell you they're unfollowing. That's so.
Have you been told?
Yeah, people would say, oh, I'm sorry, I can't. You know, they've been following you for years. They've seen all the shit that I tweet. They've got waded through all of that. And they go, no, I'm sorry, I can't. I will have to unfollow
you. I'm drawing
you
the line now.
And you kind of go, yes, all right. You don't need to tell me individually. It's okay. I'm not that bothered.
Is there a demographic of person who reacts badly to you?
It's sort of weird with Twitter because people choose to follow you. So
yeah,
that's
right.
That's so, you know, so it's odd that someone would follow you, especially for a while, and then be upset by anything you've said. Because I say lots of upsetting stuff on there, so it'd be weird. But I find that a little bit with a gig. You know, you're doing a gig, and you do lots of offensive stuff, and then you'll do a joke and someone will go, no, that joke, it affects me.
Yeah,
that's about that's from my life. You go, what about the other jokes I just did about... No, that was all right, because that I wasn't in those.
Yeah.
So the world has become... The world has become... Everyone is, you know, starts to see themselves. And I think this is actually... I talk about time travel and alternate universes a lot. But I think people generally see themselves as the centre of the universe.
Yeah.
And that everything's created for them.
But isn't that...
So they feel the need to go, oh, you had a guest on who I don't like. Yeah. Out of the 100 podcasts, one of them I didn't like. I go, yeah, it's not just for you. So just skip that one or watch it and see if you like them. So people get upset about that.
Yeah.
It's in the same way. So this week they were talking about would you travel back in time to kill Hitler as a baby? This was a big internet
thing. That's the question.
And everyone's going, well, if you did that, then things might turn out different. But nobody thinks if you went back and killed Hitler, the whole of history would be different and you wouldn't exist.
That's right.
So regardless of...
I can say with absolute certainty that because my grandmother's first husband was in a boat that got torpedoed by Japanese off the coast of Australia, and that was...
So there you go. But even so, just
changed. That wasn't a funny anecdote. I wasn't telling that, like, this is going to fucking slay him. Because things are getting a bit serious now. I'll lighten the mood with the dead submariner.
I think you were saying, I bet you can't beat me in my tragic story of lost from my friend.
I don't think it's that... Well, I mean, I never met him. It's a sad story.
Yeah.
But I don't get upset when I tell it. I go, But, lost a relative? back in World War II? Submarines,
You can't go on Who Do You Think You Are if you don't do that. That's so you've got to be...
Oh, really?
A guy, from 300 years ago who probably about 5 million people are related to now because they're such... Well, I am one of those people. And he died. But, you know, he probably would have died by now anyway. And if he hadn't died, I would know. Because if you change anything, change one little thing, and everything will ultimately change. But change a big thing, like...
I've seen Back to the Future. I know how it works.
No, Back to the Future does
you
not...
You go back with a sports almanac, and it gets into the wrong hands.
See, that doesn't work. If you go to... that, Back to the Future.
Yeah.
That's a very good example. Back to the Future. I watched it again this week, because it was my wife's birthday. She was born on October the 21st, so we watched it on October the 21st.
Not 1985.
She wasn't born in 1985. She was...
I was about to say, don't you dare say, because 1985 is when she was born. I was going to say, that's not a good anecdote.
1987. And she...
cool.
1997. We nearly got to the point where it's actually legal to have sex with someone born in the 21st century, and I'm looking forward to that day. Because at least finally I won't be committing a crime.
That's right. In one more year, you're not a criminal.
But Back to the Future doesn't know what it's doing. It's stupid, right?
That's so bullshit.
No, let's say, okay, I'll take you through this. It's a good film, but the time travel, because it implies that by travelling back to, in time, and then Marty changes stuff. A, if he changed any little thing, it would change everything anyway, so that's all fucked up in any case. Yeah. But he goes back, in an early scene, the black guy who's going to be the mayor is sweeping the floor, and then he goes, oh, you're the guy, you're going to be the mayor. And he goes, oh, mayor, yeah, I never thought of that, I'll be the mayor. But in the reality we've just been in, he's becoming the mayor, so he has thought of it. The implication is that Marty has made him think that, but he's gone back to a different changed reality, and then so it doesn't work.
But maybe this is the multiverse idea.
It doesn't work within the logic of this. Also, if Biff went back to the sports almanac and won, the minute he's betted on the first race and won, the whole of history changes, so all the rest of the book is useless.
Yeah. That's such a shame, because I feel like that's a movie that's done quite well. And it's based on a fragile house of lies. I'm so,
Well, you know, so, and do they start disappearing in the future? It's a different time. They're very confused.
Well, yeah, and he would, you know, when he sort of sees his hand, like during the Chuck Berry song, and it wouldn't have happened like that.
It wouldn't work like that.
It's not an accurate film.
No. I'm glad we decided that. I'm glad we sorted that out. So, what was your award-winning show about? You've done the last two shows, which I haven't seen. I have seen a lot of your shows.
But yes, you have.
And we
flattered together.
We've
for
stayed in
quite
a flat for a few
times.
In fact, in the flat in Edinburgh, we stayed in. It was you and your now husband, and Lucy Porter and Justin Edwards, are now husband.
That's right.
And me and my wife would.
That's right.
So we all got married and had babies.
Together, all on the same night.
Yeah.
It was great, it was wild. Yeah. But I remember, I think the last time we lived together, that was about 2007.
No.
Yeah. God. I know. Again, but yes, this year's show is called A Day in October. And I've sort of been moving away from doing just straight stand-up shows. I've been doing stories and doing an hour-long narrative. And so this show was the second of a kind of teenage stories, where it is an hour-long story, and it was about a boy who died and came back to life. Yes.
Is it a true story?
Don't think that's important. I don't think it matters. It's got elements of truth, but you know it is about rewriting. And it was a hard show to do each night because there was a point in the show where this kid would die and. It was an exhausting show. Like, I actually got quite upset towards the end, and it was kind of really the wear and tear of it, which sounds really wanky. Like, whenever actors talk about how upset they get, I always thought, fuck off. But then I actually did a show that required me to go to a fairly, sad place each night, and it did gradually kind of wear me down over, the sadness did kind of creep in. Like, it's a horrible, it's not a nice place to go to each night.
But it's interesting, because, again, you've been doing stand-up for, 15 years?
15 years.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's interesting when you do stand-up over that length of time, how it changes and what you're doing changes.
And you have to change as well. Like, you can't just keep on doing the same thing, can you, Richard? I'm just looking at talking cock. There's a cock.
Talking cock. Okay. Yeah. There's a lot of humour in cocks.
There's tons of humour.
I do
in
a lot
cocks.
Of, as I got older, I do more serious stories about cocks that are diseased or,
Yeah, diseased cocks are serious.
That's weeping, like a weeping
cock.
And then I go, and then his cock gets tied. It's not funny. There's some pus started coming out of the end of it. It's not funny. It's a serious. Just because it's got a cock in it.
A really sad show about an infected penis. Richard Herring. Yeah. And we're going to be dropping the jokes for tonight. Talk about a serious issue.
We should do. But I think that's because you did a thing in The Guardian where you talked about an old routine you used to do about a kind of horrible heckle you had.
Yeah.
Where a guy was, threatening you.
Yeah, well, he stood up.
Into a comedy routine.
Yeah, right. He did this. This was a gig when I was. Oh, it might have been about 12 years ago. And it was a really rough club. And this guy, he heckled during the show, if you don't shut the fuck up, I'm going to come up there and fuck you in the ass. Right. And see, right, now that's the appropriate. And the whole thing spiraled out of control. I did this kind of, fucking come on. And then he, rushed the stage and, he got removed from the venue. And I stopped performing for, a month after it. I was really frightened. And the whole thing had really affected me. And the idea that what we do, because, you know, we're here just talking into a microphone saying whatever comes into our head, and sometimes you go, fuck, there's like a serious consequence. Sometimes you say it to the wrong person, or what you think is appropriate isn't, whatever. And I ended up doing this big routine about this heckle. And I kind of made it, it became like a funny routine that I would talk about the event and about what happened. And I stopped doing that piece of material because it kind of felt like, in a way, I was making mockery of the seriousness of it. Because I got away unscathed, I then told this, oh my God, this thing happened. And I totally betrayed the seriousness of it. And the seriousness was that I was petrified, security got involved. He should never have done it in the first place. Yeah. And I found that telling that routine, like, you know, in sort of boozy Saturday night clubs, the thing that was really worrying was what I'd tell the anecdote, you know, this guy stood up and shouted, I'm going to come up there and fuck you in the ass. And he'd get a fucking huge laugh. And it felt like I was sort of complicit in sort of going, ah, yeah, I mean, shit like that happens, right? Like, it wasn't, it didn't have this feel of, wow, that was a really... What a frightening thing to say to a... Well, then I was like 25, maybe. You know, and I stopped doing that routine, so I kind of... It's really weird when you think, you know, I'm not responsible for why people are laughing, but I felt like I was giving out these cues that it was... That it wasn't as serious as it was.
Yeah, sure. I mean, it's interesting the way definitely... I think comedy's changed and audiences have changed, and I think that, you know, that's interesting. The response there was immediately like, oh, no, that's not on, which I think 5 years ago it wouldn't have been.
But you've got a good audience.
We have
there. I totally underestimated what your audience would be capable of.
They don't know that you can have sex with someone in the arse.
They've gone quiet because they're trying it. Everyone's quietly trying it with the person next to them.
But in a sense, the routine was, you know, you could argue it was empowering in as well, couldn't you, that you were taking control of that awful situation.
So, exactly. And I mean,
it's still a very funny routine.
But that's exactly, I felt this real conundrum because I kind of felt like, as a stand-up, all you can really do is talk about what you experience. You know, like that's, we process the world and, you know, and that was an experience that really affected me. But I don't... I don't think when I talked about it that I actually went, oh, and I was really frightened and I was in a very vulnerable position, because then it's not funny anymore. Then it becomes a scary story. But I kind of felt like, in a way, I wasn't showing solidarity with the people for whom something like that had led to a terrible thing.
No.
And there was intent. This guy was, he was hammered. He thought it was okay. He was intimidating. And I just, the whole routine just started to sit very uncomfortably with me.
Yeah.
But then, I don't know, and I can see the argument both ways. I can say, well, you know, I took an experience that was horrible and I made it funny and I owned that experience.
Yeah.
But then it just, it felt so uncomfortable because I couldn't predict what people were laughing at. I couldn't predict where the laugh was going to come when I told that story.
No, it is when you have those, in my current show, I do, at the beginning I do a joke talking about my wife giving birth and then say, and then I say Robbie Williams said when his wife gave birth, it was like watching his favourite pub burn down, which... But that gets a massive laugh, and I then want to discuss about why that's a weird metaphor to how you would see your wife being like your favourite pub, and what does
your
that
wife's
say
about, vagina?
Yeah, what does that say
is
about
like it? A pub that's on fire.
Yeah.
I've had two children, and I can't describe the experience as being anything like.
No. Well, and just being a spectator at the event was that was not how I felt.
How did you? I've never. How did you go? How were you with the whole experience?
It was really strange. I was really disturbed by seeing my wife in so much pain all the way through, it was really horrific. So I felt as much as a lot of it was great. Yeah. I mean, I do talk about this in my show, but a lot. It's great to get, you know. But you're worrying about. You're thinking, well, will I recognise this babe? Will there be a connection? And it was so horrific. All of it was so. And she had not a very complicated birth, but there was a few bits and pieces. And my baby was just crying as it came out, screaming as she came out.
Yeah.
And she's all squashed up and she'd been twisted round.
They look awful.
And they look terrible. Yeah. And it was a pretty horrific start to finish disaster. So until about 2 hours later, I was quite shaken up by it.
But I feel bad because there is absolutely nothing that the man can do.
No.
Like, other than smooth your hair and go, you're doing really well. Get your fucking hands off me. Don't fucking... fucking touch me, you know, because it's, you know, you are in this really, like, this, you know, primordial state. Like, I mean, the never, you know, you sort of walk around and you have thoughts and opinions and you get dressed and you have an espresso and then I'm on the ground screaming, shitting into a cup. Yeah. I've just lined you up for a joke, though, Richard. You know, and the pain was excruciating. I it was so painful. I don't, you know, I never say this to women who are pregnant, but I'm like, it hurt more than anything I can ever describe. I was in so much pain I wanted to rip my face off. It was like hours of it. It was hours of unendurable pain, and I was like, and pissing everywhere. It was just fucked. I fucking hated it. Yeah, and amongst it, my lovely husband's like, you're doing so well. Oh, you're a goddess.
Yours sounds, I'm glad I wasn't at yours. It would have been weird if I'd been at yours, though, wouldn't it?
I would have liked it. I would have fucking loved it. I actually, that would have been possible. But also, you get people, like, that's the thing, you know, you got your legs up in stirrups, and, you know, three people walk in and have a look, and they'll talk to each other, and go, and then walk out, and you're like, bye.
It's very worrying when there's just when the head is, just the head
crowning,
is out.
The crowning, that hurts.
But I actually couldn't process what I was seeing. Yeah. I generally couldn't, I looked three times, and it looked different every time. I thought my baby had like a tiny head, and then I thought she had a massive head.
It's an oblong head.
Yeah, it was just all waves.
Yeah.
And she was screaming, and it didn't look real. I say in the show, it's like, looked like the special effects were about as good as the original Total Recall.
I know exactly what you mean.
It just doesn't look like a real...
Yeah, I know what you mean.
...real thing.
Yeah.
I'm still not convinced she is real. I mean, I'm trying to get difficult to get my head around having a baby. She's 8 months old now, so I should have got used to it, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it'll kick in eventually.
Every now and then go, oh, yeah.
And then you'll stop it with those awful tweets. Those sensitive tweets. I just think that's hilarious. Someone got upset about that. A message to my 8-month-old. That's really insensitive. Go on.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
I will carry on. I'll ask you some emergency questions. Okay. It's going very well. We don't really need to do this, but I will. I've got some new ones, so I'm very excited about them. That's someone else's one. Hold on. Why do elephants have such low rates of cancer? I like it because it sounds like a sort of setup to a joke, but I want to know your genuine...
Why they have such low rates of cancer.
They've only got... Compared to humans, who have 25% rates of cancer.
We have 20... What do you mean? Like one in four people
will get cancer. Yeah.
Hey, guys, sobering.
Only 5% of elephants get cancer. So, you know...
But can they check elephants as frequently as they check humans?
It's difficult.
Like an elephant
really
can't go,
to do their testicles.
Yeah. Right. An elephant can't say, I don't feel right.
Yeah.
I'm not feeling something.
So you're saying there's a lot of cancer-ridden elephants out there, we just don't
know. I'm saying there's probably more than we know of because an elephant can't go, I think there's something wrong with me. Whereas a human can communicate through language. Maybe the stats are unreliable. That's...
I've got a feeling in my
testicles.
I'm not weighing in on this. I'm not weighing in on this. I'm not joining in. I'm too frightened of the backlash. But with that, I mean, that sounds reasonable to me.
It's because they have 20 TP53 genes compared to the humans' one. That is the answer. You didn't know.
Do you I was going to figure that out. I was going to nut that out on
I just thought you might know.
No, I did.
But I was interested to know, because some people think maybe it would be because they die earlier. They don't, you know, human beings live longer. That's, they don't smoke. Human beings smoke.
Yeah. Do you know elephants don't smoke? I mean, I didn't. Just because you haven't seen a picture of an elephant.
It would be good if they did.
It'd be amazing. Don't. Big stogie at the end of the. And smoke out the ears for the. You just haven't seen an elephant smoke.
I haven't, no. Okay, I'll ask you a proper one. Is sex with a ghost cheating? If you have sex.
Are you referring to the film Ghost?
No. I'm praying if you had sex with a ghost and you're married to someone else.
All right, are you technically
would
having
you, would you be cheating on your partner, or is it okay?
Hmm. I'd say, yeah, that's cheating. Yeah. Do you have feelings for the ghost, or is it like a one-night stand with the ghost? Is this a ghost like the ghost in Mrs. Muir, where there's been like a continuing relationship over time, where you go, I can't deny how I feel for you anymore?
No.
Or it's just a ghost has come out of the cupboard.
It's a ghost.
And
you know, sometimes ghosts come out.
How like ghosts come out.
They just come out, and you're asleep, and they start having sex with you.
On top of you.
Yeah. I mean, essentially, they're taking advantage of you, but then if you are into it
and you're in,
and
right.
don't go, hey, get off, ghost.
I'm married. I have an 8-month-old child.
If the ghost says, you know, I'll carry on, are you then?
What if you don't orgasm? What if you get halfway through and then push the ghost off and go, I can't do this?
It's difficult with a ghost because the lack of friction, I guess. It will be harder to. Yeah. Orgasm, because it's just a sort
but
of
ethereal
thing.
But it'll be happening in your mind, because you're obviously mentally ill for this to be happening in the first place.
Yeah.
So for a mentally ill person, they're not going, this isn't even happening. They'd be going, oh, I'm fucking a ghost, and I love it. I'm loving it.
Have you ever seen a ghost?
Have I ever seen a ghost?
Have you ever seen a ghost?
Yeah. Yes, I have, Richard.
Have you? What
was happened? It was really frightening. I'm just doing that improv thing where you're meant to say yes. Because people do improv courses now, and that's a big part of it. You don't shut the person down and go, no. All right, yes.
It's more than that, though, you know, improv. You can't
you're not meant to say it out loud.
I have to say yes
to this.
Yes, I have. That's all I'm going to tell you about.
All right, yeah. I have got a spooky story that comes from a very good authority.
Okay.
And as someone who I don't think would make, you know, when someone goes, I've got a scary, a story that's a bit unexplainable.
Yeah.
It was a baby monitor thing.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm terrified of my baby monitor.
Yeah, right.
Well, I am. I think it's really the scariest thing in the
they
world.
They make, and also the thing that I find really frightening, like, you know, a child laughing is like a beautiful sound. Child laughing in its sleep. And my kid sometimes laughs in his sleep, and it scares the shit out of me. And it's like this kind of... what can she see? But this person, they said that when their kid was getting the scans, you know, like the antenatal scans, they called their kid Bobble because the number on it was like 808873 or something. It looked like Bobble, so they called it Bobble. And then when she was born, they had the baby monitors and stuff. And they were in a house somewhere, like in... it was an old house. And they were watching telly one night, and they had the baby monitor on, and then they just heard a soft voice going, Bobble. And they were on their own. They were middle of nowhere, old house, middle of nowhere kind of thing. And they are both sane people. They aren't people you go, mm-hmm.
And they both heard it.
During our Coke binge, we heard this. it wasn't... they're very sane, normal people. And they just heard this, Bobble. And they said it sounded like an adult voice.
Yeah.
And they ran up into the room because they thought, fuck, there's an intruder. And it was just...
Yeah, what kind of intruder would that be? If you can't break, I'm going to break into that room. I'm going to find out what nickname they have for their baby. They're going to break into the house and say scary voice.
I don't think they ran
and then run away.
I will find the antenatal scans, get the number of the scan and turn it into a word.
They're scary, those monitors. I think I might have mentioned this before, but it's like my one. When you turn it on, for a second it shows you the image, the previous last image when it was on.
Ooh.
So for a second when it comes on, well, the you know your baby's in the cot, and then you turn the monitor on, and there's an empty cot. And you go, ah! And then the baby appears. But that goes, it's terrifying.
Yeah, it's a horrible feeling when you think you've misplaced your baby.
Well, just sometimes that happens, you go, oh, you see it, and you go, and then, oh, of course, she's up, and my wife's got her out. But sometimes that's, it's horrible having a baby, don't do it. It's hard for
all you do is worry.
You have a horrible time when it comes out. And if you were the Prime Minister, would you use nuclear weapons?
Yeah.
Cool.
Fucking all the time. Any disagreement, I would instantly raise the stakes.
Yeah. I think it'd be
I'd be on FaceTime with my finger on the button going, really? Really? With other countries that didn't have nuclear weapons, obviously. You don't want to do it if they can do it
I think, if you don't ever use them, people go, yeah, they're not serious about it. I think if you get in,
you got occasionally
send one off. just to show them I'm serious about it.
Yeah.
So don't mess with
it. I don't want to do this.
I'm not going to do it again.
But I want you to know I can.
Yeah. Good.
Would you? All right, well, let's turn the tables, Richard.
I think I would send them all off straight away. And I genuinely think if you sent them all off, I think the other side would have to be a dick to bomb you back.
Why?
Because they'd destroy the world, wouldn't they?
Because
they're there as a deterrent.
Yeah.
So if that deterrent doesn't work, I think if the bombs are coming over, you have to go, well played.
As in a poker game.
You won. Yeah, it's like a game of chess. You've won the game of chess.
You've sent
them at the size over. It's just churlish to send them back, and it's like going, oh, because you've done
it. I hate
it.
You back. I hate you too.
So I'm going to destroy the whole world. And go, okay, well, we'll all be wiped out, but you... carry on the human race over there.
Something that people of your age talk about, the threads. That was a real... Yeah. Yeah, right. That was a formative trauma. Because the one in Australia, we saw an American production that I think must have been like they took the idea of threads. And it was called The Day After. Mm. And it had, and I remember, because my babysitter would let me stay up and watch television. She didn't like getting involved in any sort of discipline. And I saw that Steve Guttenberg was in it, and I was really excited because it was the guy from Police Academy. I was like, oh, the guy from Police Academy's on telly, he's going to be awesome. And it was this, and it had Jason Robards and Ali Sheedy, also from Breakfast Club. And I was like, oh my God, it's the woman from the Breakfast Club, the guy from Police Academy is going to be amazing. And it was just this story about a family in Kansas and the day the atomic bomb goes off and the aftermath. And it was at the end there was this big spiel about how this was an appeal to world leaders to disarm and stuff. And I hear the same, about
I was terrified. I think in the '80s we were really terrified. So 70s and 80s, I assumed nuclear war was going to happen. It must have been worse in 1963, or 62, when it nearly did happen. But I'd see I'd see a plane going over with the trail of smoke coming out, and I think that's a nuclear bomb.
Really?
Yeah, I just was we're convinced it's going to happen. I think it's scarier now because they definitely will get used.
Do you reckon?
In our lifetime, definitely.
Do you think so? I've just grown up with this kind of mutually assured destruction.
Well, but that's irrelevant now, isn't it?
Why?
Because a lot of the people who are enemies quite want to wipe out the world anyway.
That's true.
And if they can get hold of a nuclear weapon, they will definitely use it. And there's we can't fire back at them because they don't live anywhere specific. So we're fucked. Also, it's like having a gun in your house.
Yeah.
The chances are the gun.
Two.
Well, the gun will probably be turned on you by a burglar or one of your family. At some point. That's what I sort of feel about nuclear weapons. If we got them, they probably will just go wrong and blow us up ourselves.
Yeah.
Which they nearly have a lot. If you look into it, there's been loads of times when nuclear weapons... Don't want to bring everyone down. But there's been loads of times. Just enjoy your life while you've got it, because it's definitely going to happen. In your lifetime. Some of the younger ones, not new. You'll be fine, Andy.
Yeah.
But
I kind of feel like... Do you know what, though? I kind of feel like even if the bomb did go off, I kind of think, I'm going to be 40 next year. I'm nearly halfway through anyway. Mm. So from a personal perspective, part of me kind of thinks, it's all right.
Well, I thought I was going to die in 1999 because that's when Nostradamus predicted the world would end. So as a teenager, I thought, I'm going to get to 32 and that'll be it. So every year after that has been a bonus. I was absolutely convinced but I now am more convinced. One will just go. There's been loads of times when new planes with nuclear weapons on have just crashed and the nuclear weapon's been on fire and they're gone, that might blow up now, mightn't it?
That happened with the Enola Gay. Apparently, when they were transporting the atomic bomb to Hiroshima, they thought they weren't going to clear the runway.
Right.
And they were so nervous because they're like, oh, God, if this atomic bomb goes off here, everyone's going to know that we've got this weapon. And they were, like, trying to get off the runway going, oh, fuck, it's too heavy. And then they did make it off the runway.
They did. Unlucky for the people of Hiroshima.
Very unlucky.
Yeah, lucky.
It wasn't a good thing for them.
So what else do I want? I'll talk about something from your life now. Are you excited? are you ever mistaken for Sarah Kendall, the area director of Network Rail's Wales route?
It has happened on occasion.
She spent 8 years working on the Channel Tunnel. She's quite proud about that. And but she's now excited to be working in Wales where there is no specific proper route there, I think. I think they just have to move the rails as they go along. I think that's what she means.
Wow. Yeah. I did, when I was much younger, I got mistaken for Nicole Kidman when I was like 24.
Yeah.
And a group of tourists came over and asked for a photograph. And I said yes. I went, yeah, okay. And I got in the photograph and I was more attractive back then. And also, Nicole Kidman hadn't had all the facelifts and stuff.
Yeah.
So we looked more alike.
Yeah.
As she's become more facelifted and glamorous, we don't look so much alike.
We still look alike.
But about 15 years ago, there was enough of a resemblance for I'd say a myopic tourist.
Well, Japanese people used to think I looked like Michael J. Fox. I found it quite racist.
Did you say that?
Yeah, I said, you know, I don't go, you all look like some famous Japanese person.
Kazuo Ishiguro.
Yeah, could have been him.
You should have said that. Just said it really snarkily and go, yeah, sure. And are you Kazuo Ishiguro? And then just let that settle on their soul.
It's all right, because Japanese girls quite like Michael J. Fox. So
did you get heaps of poon?
I went out with one Japanese girl.
Did you?
Who thought I looked like Michael J. Fox.
But she thought she'd done it with Michael J. Fox.
Yeah, I got Michael J. Fox's... I got some of his. And I pretended that was Michael J. Fox. And then we discussed Back to the Future. I said, yeah, it doesn't quite make sense.
Doesn't make any sense. The whole film falls apart under close examination.
A lot of Teen Wolf also is ridiculous.
Did you ever see Teen Wolf 2 with Justin Bateman?
No.
Yeah, they did a sequel.
Jason Bateman? Or
Jason, sorry,
the guy
Justin.
From Arrested Development.
Yeah, right. Yeah, they did a Teen Wolf 2.
Well, Teen Wolf in a way was Teen Wolf 2 because they did Teen Wolf with Michael Landon in the 1950s.
Did they? Hello. Do you mean the guy from the Prairie?
Little House on the Prairie.
Little House on
the
Prairie.
He died of cancer.
We've got to stop doing this. Every time we're telling an anecdote, we are going straight back to terminal illness and atomic bombs. This is what we do when we're not in front of people.
We do.
We've
got quite a sick sense of humour between each other, and we're really trying to...
I'm trying, I know. And we're hitting these brick walls because we're going... Anyway, another question. Because it could... Yeah. I just don't want everyone to hate us.
They don't. They quite like you. Not as much as they like. Sarah Kendall from the...
From Beehive.
From Area Director of Network Rail. I wonder if she's ever been mistaken for you.
Probably.
Yeah.
I'd imagine so.
Yeah.
What does she look like? You've Googled her.
I didn't look. I'm not a pervert.
I'm not suggesting you brought up the image and masturbated over it. Oh, this is being filmed. I just did the worst wank motion. My husband pointed out that whenever I do like a wanker, he's like, you do the worst wank motion. Right. I'm like, what a wank.
I think he's trying to send out a subliminal
message.
Think
so? Yeah.
You know, you really need to work on that.
Ixnay on that. That's the face I pull when we do it. Yeah, I go...
I know, I don't, the hand job, I think I discussed this last week as well, but the hand job is the worst of the jobs.
Why?
Because you can do it yourself. I'm like, as an adult, I think if you're like 16, getting a hand job's quite an exciting moment from someone else.
Yeah.
But as an adult, it's just like, oh, come on.
You'd rather have it.
Well, there's loads more stuff we could be doing. And, you know, I could do this better myself. I can really do this well.
That's an interesting point. I never thought of that. Yeah. I don't know how to weigh in on this topic with a husband. But I sensed that. I kind of already knew that. I had already intuited that.
Yeah.
That the hand job is not what it might have been as a 16-year-old.
No, I mean, just anything was amazing when you were 16.
Yeah.
Just the idea that someone might be thinking about your penis was enough.
Yeah. I don't think 16-year-old girls do think about... No. I don't think they go, oh, penis. That's the last part. And then when you do get confronted, you're like, ah! What? That's attached to this? It's so confronting.
Yeah.
I remember the first penis I touched.
Did you?
Yeah.
I'm glad. I mean, I hope this is going to be an okay story. I was 6 years old.
It's because I keep looking. I'm getting this. You've put talking cock right there. Yeah. And my eye keeps going to it. And I'm suddenly going, I once touched a penis when I was a... But yeah, it was. I was shocked.
Were
I was
you?
Quite. I was a bit.
It's a shocking thing.
It's shocking. Were you shocked by the first vagina?
I'm going to show you mine backstage, and then you'll be surprised.
I'll be amazed, stunned and amazed. Do you remember the first vagina you touched?
I guess it was my mum's. As I came out.
As you came out. Just ask him.
Yeah.
It's quite a memorable thing.
Yeah, it is quite memorable.
Were you a bit...
I was 28 years old at the time.
I suppose I shouldn't have been in a pharmacy. Good though. I mean, jokes like that lighten the mood. It's good. It's good. If you can pop one of those in, it does help. It gets a laugh.
It does.
Yeah.
As nice as they once were, I think kettle crisps are not as nice as they were.
Really? Yeah. I actually had some yesterday for the first time in ages.
Yeah.
And I thought, these are fucking nice. I should eat these more often. Like, it had been a long time since I'd had them. And I thought...
I disagree. I think they've gone downhill.
Why?
But have I changed or have they? Don't answer. That's a rhetorical emergency
question. I have noticed the skin is on the outside of the chip and they never used to be. Like, they've skimmed on the skinning process.
Yeah.
Now you can see a little brown outline.
They're more like Pringles now. They don't feel like properly cut crisps. Anyway, we're not talking about that. And they're not as tangy. The salt and vinegar isn't as strong as it once was.
Yeah, well, maybe they've had to temper that to reach a broader market.
Well, I don't like it. I like them in the
highest sophistication. Yeah, but not everyone has your taste, which it's like the internet thing.
But that's why I'm complaining about it on the internet. If you could travel back in time to compare any food of today with an equivalent in the past, A, what time would you go to, and B, what would the food be?
Oh, I'd take sushi.
Oh, yeah.
I'd take sushi back to my grandfather.
Yeah.
Because he was a fisherman.
Right.
Yeah, he was.
Okay.
Not even trying to make you laugh. The one who got to live.
Yeah, okay. I think if anyone was going to die in a boat, that would be...
You'd think.
He would be the fisherman.
That's not how it turned out, Richard. Life is rich with irony. So the submariner died during World War II, and then my grandmother remarried.
Yeah.
And she married a fisherman.
Okay.
And
insensitive.
She was a very shallow woman. My grandmother was a horrible woman. And she remarried almost instantly.
Yeah.
She'd read the letter and she went out and married a fisherman. And I remember back in the 80s. When he would talk about the Japanese, he really didn't like the Japanese because of the World War II thing.
And because he was Australian, just racist.
Australians are just generally
racist.
It's true. It's totally true.
Don't want to be racist to Australians, but they are all racist.
It's true. Yeah. And they don't laugh when you say that.
No.
No, they get really defensive, you know. And I would, and I remember in the 80s when he'd see Japanese people eating sushi and it really upset him. On all these different levels, like on a culinary level, he'd be like, you meant to cook the fish. He also felt that it was some form of barbarism, like, you know, it showed how mean they were or something, that the cook, like, it's raw. I don't know why, but for him, all these things just added up. And I think I would try to introduce him to, like, a sashimi platter and go, see, it's nice, isn't it? And maybe you could be a little more...
I didn't say you could take your granddad back with you. And probably, is he alive?
No, I mean,
you'd
meet him.
You'd go to him?
I would go to him back in,
All right, that's all right.
Maybe like 1960.
Yeah.
On his fishing trawler and present him with a sashimi platter. And then
how would you explain what had happened?
How would I explain myself?
How would you explain your presence to...
Well, this whole meeting would make me impossible. I probably wouldn't have been born.
Well, maybe you'd only be born if you go back and do this.
Maybe as I present the platter, my hand will start to disappear, like my, and the platter will fall down, and I'll be like, ah. What would you take? What would be your food?
I would take Kettle Crisps back to 2005 and see. I would taste the Kettle Crisps from now and the Kettle Crisps from then, and then I would go, see?
To yourself.
Yeah. Or I'd go, oh, they are.
What happened to...
So it was me that changed.
So you're the one who went...
Yeah, I thought they changed, but they haven't changed. They're the same. I'd either be the same or I'd go, see? Or I could just ring up Kettle and say, have you changed?
Have you changed
the
recipe?
I wrote about it in the Metro, and I thought Kettle Crisps would be furious and get in touch with me and send me some free Kettle Crisps. That's what usually happens.
Yeah.
If you write about stuff... I wrote about Mr. Kipling cakes, and they sent loads of free Mr. Kipling cakes. So, you know, I thought, I'll up the game. I'll write about...
Something I really like.
Yeah. Well, I was critical. I thought they would get in touch to say, well, hey, come on.
You wrote an article about that.
I wrote like 70 words about it.
How did you get 70 words out of it? Did people go, I love that thing you wrote about?
No one mentioned it. It's, well, because recently with the Metro, which is very popular, probably a lot of people who are here because of my Metro. So you can hear them. They've thought about one of the ones and just started chuckling there as they thought about it.
Oh, the kettle chip article,
I used to just write 600 words, and then they said, could you now write an extra little 70 words to put in a box?
Oh, like
week?
A thought for the day.
Yeah. The hard, it's really annoying, it's really difficult.
70 words each day?
No, once a week.
And it was like a Richard Herring thought bubble thing.
It sort of is.
It sounds awful.
Yeah, it is. Still.
What kind of prick came up with that idea?
Still.
I mean, you sit on the bed and you count the fucking money.
You would not believe how much they paid me to write that Metro article. You genuinely would not believe it. You wouldn't believe I'd been doing it for 3 years. You're still doing it.
Do you think stuff like that sells tickets? Eventually?
Maybe.
I don't know the point of anything anymore. It just feels like there's so much happening. There is like a glut of just fucking noise. And I don't know how anybody... likes anything. Like, how do you find something you go, because you're just constantly, there's like this bombardment thing.
Yeah.
It is quite overwhelming.
I think it is. There's a lot of people doing a lot of the things now. And like, in everything. So like 20 years ago when we started, when we say talk about Edinburgh, when I first went to Edinburgh, there might be 50 comedians doing shows. Yeah. So if you did a show, there was a good chance you'd get reviewed. And if it was good, someone might go, oh, come and do something with that. But now if there's 700 acts or something.
Yeah, it's great.
And you were one of the best 8 of them.
That's right. Yeah. I was, which is pretty amazing.
It is.
If you think about those numbers, Richard, it means my show was phenomenal.
It is. Are you doing a show again in somewhere that I can come and see it?
Yeah, I'm going to be doing it at the Soho Theatre in February.
Cool.
Yeah, and that'll be, I don't know what else to say. I'll be doing it. I'm going to make eye contact with the audience. I'm going to be doing it in February at the Soho Theatre. You should come along. It's really sad. Aren't you sick of fucking like stand up? It all wears a bit thin, doesn't it?
I think you go through a period where you feel like that at about the 15-year mark.
Yeah.
And then you get over that and sort of start enjoying it again.
Really?
Is that what happened to you? Well, I think I went through a big period. It's really difficult. It's a really competitive thing. Like you were saying backstage, people going, "Oh, I didn't get nominated," and getting furious about it.
You know? People get fucking angry about it because they go, "I was on the long list."
Yeah.
And then I can't, you know, and they get, you know.
And I don't think you go to Edinburgh and expect that, but it's always there and it's annoying. And I was even annoyed about it after 2000 when I wasn't even eligible. I would still be annoyed that I didn't get nominated because it's annoying that there's a prize and you're like, and I hated the prize.
Yeah.
But I think you go through a period where you just go through different periods where it gets difficult. But I think you also sort of realise, I mean, if things are going okay and you can still work,
that's true,
then it's kind of all right. And then I think I did all my 12 shows this summer and I didn't go to Edinburgh. And I guess, like, last year in Edinburgh, I was thinking, oh, you know, I've worked so hard and, you know, I'm not getting that many people to see the show, and is it worth carrying on? Mm. And so you get to that point, and then you sort of think, well, actually, yeah, you know, and then you start doing shows and think, oh, well, you know, couple hundred people have come and seen that show. Actually, if you think of it that way, if you think of it that way rather than that way,
yeah.
If you start thinking rather than, oh, so someone got 100,000 people come to see him and I got 200, it doesn't look so good. But if you think, yeah. You know, someone would tweet, you go, well, I don't, you know, I want you, I, you try working in a warehouse at 4 o'clock in the morning as if that my job is like really easy.
Yeah.
And you kind of go, yeah, I wouldn't like to do that, but just come and try.
Yeah.
Standing on stage and seeing how many people buy a ticket for you first of all, and then try and entertain them for an hour. So you know, it's like it's an impressive thing to do it. I think so. I think I'm enjoying it again, but well, I didn't go to Edinburgh, so that might be the reason.
I think that's exactly it. I mean, we were talking about this backstage, but Edinburgh is possibly the darkest that I feel emotionally. It's such a pressure cooker, and there's so much. You know, you know the you know, you worry about numbers and you worry about reviews, and it's really the only time of the day that you feel any level of calm is the hour of the day when you're doing the show, because that's the job, that's the work. Yeah. Everything else, the other 23 hours, is just the anxiety. And this year, I had a really good Edinburgh this year, and I was more strung out than I've ever, to the point where I couldn't even enjoy the success, because I was so worn down emotionally by all the worry and the concern. And, you know, I've had Edinburghs that haven't gone well, and those take their toll on you emotionally. Like, that's something... I read this year that there's a support group for comedians in Edinburgh, because it's such a problem with comedians falling apart and getting depression. And, you know, they actually have, like... You know, you can go and see someone and you can talk about how you're feeling. Because you're getting on stage every night going, hello, everyone, here's my show. And it can start to sort of fuck with you a little bit.
No, definitely. I mean, it does. Well, it does, because, and also the more competition there is, the more difficult it is, and then you're vying against other people. You can't help comparing yourself to other people.
Yeah.
You can't. You're worrying about the money.
Yeah.
You're worrying about your career.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's difficult. I'm not surprised. I'm sort of surprised that everyone gets through it.
Yeah.
You know, I sort of am surprised there aren't 5 or 6 people a year who just go, oh yeah, they didn't make it back.
But there are stories that I have heard of people who have just abandoned the run because they're having such a bad time that they've just gone, oh, fuck this. And they've just, you know, just left, you know, just kind of cut their losses. Yeah, and that's a pretty devastating thing to go through. It's such a huge... Like, when people arrive in Edinburgh and the Edinburgh Guide is, like, that big and they're going, who am I going to go and see? I'll see that person on telly.
Yeah.
You know, it does make it, you know, especially for younger people coming through, to get their head above the rest of the group, it's really tough.
It is, but then maybe it's good in the way that Edinburgh will become about going and getting better at what you're doing rather
than,
absolutely.
You
know, so as long as, but if people see it like that, but yeah. I don't think people see it like that.
Yeah.
So I think people still go thinking, oh, you know, this is the year and I'll be discovered. We had Louisa Armelan on the other week who that kind of happened to. You know, she went to Edinburgh and got discovered in Edinburgh more or less, but it hardly ever happens.
Yeah.
So it's, I think if you can go there going, I'll become a better comedian and I'll see this as a 20-year progression rather than what's going to happen in the next 3 years. But it's very difficult to do that. I'm sure I didn't think that when I started, but
was,
now I'm
was
forced to.
Was she depressing
to.
At all? Did she talk about atomic bombs and cancer?
No,
and
she was very upbeat.
Yeah. She'd be upbeat. A lot of laughs.
Yeah.
Everyone had a good time.
To be fair, I've talked about cancer and atomic bombs.
You did bring it up.
I
went with it happily. Yeah. I happily joined in.
You're from Australia.
I am from Australia.
I've just
I can
realized.
Almost hear the edit points. I can hear the join in the digital film.
What's that like?
It's hot.
Yeah.
It's fucking hot.
Yeah.
It's really a lot of space.
Yeah.
Got marsupials that you don't have here.
Yeah.
I've got Paul Hogan. He's he's Australian. Dame Edna, she's Australian.
Yeah.
A lot of Australians who have done very well internationally.
They have, yeah. There's
Hugh
a lot
Jackman,
of,
he's Australian.
Jim from John Robinson from Neighbours.
Jim Morrison, he
Jim
was
Robinson.
Australian. Jim Morrison's Australian.
Yeah.
From The Doors.
Yeah.
He was Australian.
28 years old, he was.
He was when he died.
Or 27, maybe.
I like writing about growing up in Australia, though.
Yeah.
For me, that's in my the shows that I do now about being a teenager in Australia. And I love that kind of... Because there is that sort of, you know, sunshine, teenagers, happy-go-lucky shit. But there was a very dark underbelly to it. Like, there is that sort of... Because it was this beach culture that I grew up in. And there was just a huge amount of drug abuse. and you know, and the sort of place where, you know, if you didn't fit in, you really didn't fit in. And it's great to write about that. You know, outsiders are so much more interesting in that kind of that kind of setting. So I find myself kind of writing more and more about Australia kind of around the late 80s, early 90s.
Yeah.
Because I do think, that, you know, from what I gather, Neighbours and Home and Away was pretty much the way in for most audience members back in that time.
Yeah.
So I really, you know, for me that's a really, it's good to write about it. And also I think people do have that expectation that it's going to be like, oh, g'day mate, how you going? And you go, no, actually these terrible things were also happening.
So you came from a place called Newcastle.
Newcastle.
It's a mining
community. It is, it's a shithole.
Right.
And we named it after your shithole here. Which is how they named the places in Australia.
Yeah.
They had a list of shitholes. And if they arrived somewhere and went, this is a shithole, then they'd refer to the list. We call it Newcastle.
Newcastle's got very nice, that one.
Is it nice now?
Yeah, ours very nice now.
Well, so is ours. It's all gentrified.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's really gentrified in Newcastle.
Yeah, all right. It's not a competition.
Yeah. It really is.
Is
Surely it?
It
is between two
Mine
places that the same.
Mine's got Surffest. It's got a surfing competition. It produces the best surfers in the world. What does Newcastle, England produce?
What is it? Ant and Dec.
No, you cannot get answers from them. Because they're on your side and they're going to try to help you out.
They've got, it's got it's like an opera house thing. Got some art in it. It's got a bridge that goes like that.
I've seen the bridge.
Yeah,
it looks like a bit like the Harbour Bridge.
It does. Gee, it's got a little opera house, a bit like the Sydney Opera House.
Yeah.
It's nice there now, yeah.
Yeah.
It's nice.
Ours had a huge heroin problem back in the 80s because all the mines were shutting down. Like, it happened to yours.
It is. Do you not think you should have called it New Newcastle?
I think it would have been confusing for people.
Yeah.
To call it New Newcastle. You should have called yours Castle.
Yeah. We'll look into that. If you had to choose between going on a date, imagine your husband Henry has died. Or just left. Would you prefer it?
If he died or left me.
Which would you prefer? Would you prefer him to die or to leave you for someone else? Which would you prefer?
I'd prefer he died.
Okay. So he's died. Very sadly, you're taking a couple of years to get over it, and you're back dating again.
Not like my grandmother; she moved on instantly.
And you have a choice between dating a 6-foot-tall penis.
Yep.
It's a man, but he's just a penis.
He's just a
got
penis.
A face. He's got a face and a penis
inside the helmet.
Yeah, in the helmet. Exactly.
Yeah.
Or a man who, instead of a penis, has a tiny man. Which of those two would you prefer to take?
No, hang on. There's a penis. One's
There's
a penis.
A gigantic penis. He's 6 foot tall, but he's just a penis. He just hasn't got balls. He just slithers around like a slug.
Leaves a trail of semen.
Yeah. No, because the semen would come out the other end. So just,
not if he's
just,
hemorrhaging at the base.
It's just down.
He's constantly hemorrhaging semen at the base.
The semen has to come from somewhere. Yeah.
Well, it does.
Yeah.
Man's not a camel.
He might wear, like, a false suit of shoulders on it to make it look like he was...
Shoulder pads and a caftan.
Yeah.
Because the caftan would cover, like, 9/8...
But then the man who's got a tiny man, it's just the tiny man standing...
Hang on, a man who's got a man...
Instead, he hasn't got a penis, it's a tiny man then.
It's him?
No, it's another man. Another man with a distinct personality.
Right.
But who, crucially... doesn't need to breathe through his mouth because he's still connected to the blood supply.
Like a baby.
Of the larger man. Yeah.
So he gets the nutrients
yeah.
that the larger
he
man
does. So
through the umbilical cord.
So if you're worried about if you were having sex with him that he would suffocate, don't worry, you'll be fine.
That would be my first concern if I was having sex with a miniature man. I'd think, oh, what if he suffocates?
I'm glad that you're a kind person. I knew you would.
Does the little man talk?
Yeah.
So he has thoughts and feelings. And
yeah,
he's got a brain. He's a sentient being.
Yeah, of course. What is this? He's like a vegetable tiny penis.
Is he attached at the feet or the head?
He's attached.
Like, is it he two feet coming out to a head? Or is he the head that come out to two feet?
Of course, his feet are attached to
his feet are attached.
That would be cruel.
The feet are attached with...
I thought it would be quite nice. I suppose if it was the other way around and you're having sex with him, you're like, he was in a little bed and the sheets were being pulled up and down.
It'd be just like that. Yeah.
You'd hold on like that.
to my vagina.
Yes.
But that doesn't make sense, because you're suggesting that his feet have the sensitivity of the head of an erect penis.
Well, they would do it in your version, that's what I'm saying. I've never thought of him that
way. So his entire body has the sensitivity of a penis.
Well, for me, he's the other way around, and his head is the head of the penis.
Right, but that would be the sensitivity.
I think that would probably be the most... Or he's just a man and he's not sensitive at all.
Yeah, okay. But he functions in the same way a penis does.
Yeah.
Right. Well, I would probably... Do I have to have sex with the 6 foot tall?
It's a date. Whether you're on a date,
just going. Oh, just going out.
Yeah, you're going out, and then you'll see. And if it goes well,
see if things go well. Yeah. Does he also have a penis?
The penis doesn't have a penis. He's a penis.
He's just a penis.
Yeah, so he doesn't need a penis. He is a penis.
Oh.
I mean, he's a big penis. You'd have to find different ways
to
satisfy
him. See, now you're going
him.
Down this weird road of, but you'd like to have sex with that, a 6 foot tall penis.
You wouldn't be able to have sex with
it. No, it wouldn't. No. I would probably go out with the man with the penis attached to. No, the man penis.
Yeah, everyone chooses him. I feel sorry
everyone
for him.
Everyone chooses him.
I feel sorry for the big penis man. You'd have to give him, like an arm job. You'd be like that. The only way you'd be able to satisfy him.
And we've already established that hand jobs are a bit ugh.
Yeah, but for him, they're the best
he's
going to
like,
get.
That's an arm job.
Unless you could stick something down the blowhole. Some guys like that.
That would be really
right, guys,
painful.
Look into the front row here.
Am I right, fellas?
Yeah. Some guys
that's
like
such
a little...
great moment to do it, am I right? Some people like having things shoved down the eye of their penis, am I right? Right, guys?
I don't know why we've ended up talking about penises.
We
so
always
much.
End up in a place
know,
that we shouldn't end up.
I don't know
that's
why
the...
that has happened. There were so much other things to talk to you about. Do go and see Sarah's shows.
Is that it? I don't think I've done very well.
I think you've done it. You've got red hair.
So I met a guy backstage who had red hair, and we did the whole "We Must Be Brothers" thing. Brothers and sisters.
You did a funny routine about guys who go, I've got a thing for redheads, that's why I wrote it. I didn't write that down to remind myself.
Oh, is that remember for me to wedge in some material?
No, I was just watching your... Go and watch Sarah on YouTube. It's very funny stuff. And that's a funny bit where you go, it's like a fetish.
That's an old joke. It's a good joke.
It's a good joke.
Yeah.
That's why I wrote down red hair as I was doing that. Yeah. But that makes it look like, you know...
I'll do it now. Let's...
Okay, do it now. Right. Yeah.
Okay.
I reckon it's definitely going to work well.
Things can surprise you, though.
Okay.
The weird thing. Oh, now it sounds like such a bad piece. The weird thing about being a redhead is that I don't remember how it goes. How does it go? You do it. Do my material.
Okay.
I don't do that.
That's my impression of you.
It's
my impression of you doing your impression of Nicole Kidman.
I'll do it for them. Okay. It'd be funny.
You didn't say, oh, just sat on my water bottle, but it's okay, there's nothing in it. Oh. It's like a fetish. I can't remember. It was very funny. Look it up on YouTube. I'll tell you what, we'll cut the bit from YouTube into this now to make it look like you did it literally here.
And then you can cut back to everyone laughing.
Yeah, we'll cut to the audience on the YouTube clip laughing.
Yeah.
And then we might use that audience for all of this.
Can you please have some really jumpy edit points where we've talked about something that and everyone's gone, oh, that's a bit sad, and then like just cut to laughter, like just really big laugh.
I think it's been a very funny podcast. I've really enjoyed it.
Have you?
You've been really good.
I don't know.
You've been really good. I'm not going to ask them just in case they disagree.
Don't.
If I go right, everyone go. No.
Am I wrong?
That guy goes.
Trash talk Beehive too much. Now I'm going back.
I did that.
You did. That's
I did
true.
That. No, you're fine. It was good. Beehive was good. It's not coming back, Sarah. Don't worry. You can trash it. You can trash as much as
you
want.
It's very hard to because you know everyone. That's the thing. If you do a show that doesn't work well, everybody who's worked on it has worked really hard.
Yeah,
so then when you come in and go, oh yeah, that was a bit of a fuck up. It's really disrespectful. It's not you. It's me. But, like, to the people who, you know, really were working hard on it. So I feel like I was a bit of a dick because I...
You were fine. And they don't care. They've moved
no
on.
No one gives a fuck.
They've moved on to other stuff.
I know. But, you know, do you ever feel that? When you sort of go, well, actually, everyone involved in that did care and worked hard and everyone was getting up early and stuff. And it didn't work out. But I don't know. I always think actors who trash talk bad movies, I think, oh, fuck off. Do you know what I mean? Like, so many people were involved in that from the script writer onwards. Like, for you to go, oh, yeah, that was fucked. Just because it didn't shower you with glory. Here we go. I'm a fucking laugh a minute.
Unfortunately, we have to wrap up. You had a chance to do a joke at the end and you ruined it.
No, I do my Nicole Kidman face, though.
Okay, right. That'll rescue it.
That'll rescue everything. All right. I think the fact that I've had to tell them it's Nicole Kidman
before
I do the impression.
Okay.
All right. Oh, the turnaround first.
Yeah.
Look at that. That was a spontaneous round of applause.
Ladies and gentlemen, Sarah Kendall! There you go. They love it. We'll be back in the back. Have a quick drink. We'll go for all that.
How do you like them sky potatoes?
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Thanks for listening. RichardHerring.com/gigs. GoFasterStripe.com for all my books, downloads, all that sort of shizzle. Oh, yeah, I know all the cool words. And would love to see you on the Can I Have My Ball Back tour if you can make it. Bye.